You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, Joe here with a quick heads up. I recorded this episode in a weird way and overloaded my CPU, causing some of the audio to occasionally click and distort. I've cleaned it up as best as I can. It's not too bad, it's not constant, and it doesn't obscure anything that's being said, so that's good. Before we recorded, Tony suggested an alternative recording method, and I went ahead with the madness I had set up. But I was wrong. So, the main takeaway here is that Tony is always right, and you should always listen to them. Anyway, on with the episode. Enjoy! Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Wrestleon.
Oh god, you're looking at me expectantly.
Yeah, you gotta do a bit
here. I do a bit here.
Yeah.
Fuck!
Okay. We're going to be talking about the third episode of the first series of Doctor Who, The Unquiet Dead, not to be confused with The Quiet Undead, which I saved a picture as earlier. This episode aired April 9th, 2005.
True facts!
And joining us today, our first guest of New Who.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah. Previously a guest on an episode I'm blanking on the title of.
Paradise Towers.
Paradise Towers. It's Steve Conway. Welcome back.
Hey, it is lovely, lovely to be back. I was just saying to you before we started recording, I'm feeling a little bit of the imposter syndrome coming on the podcast because all of your other podcast guests are physical friends that you have and people that you really like, and I'm just some random old dude half a world away.
You're just an actual professional.
But you know, it led me to thinking imposter syndrome is a big thing, and it's one thing that the Doctor in any of his or her incarnations has never had, because the Doctor goes into a room or a situation and is never shy or diffident. He or she just owns the room, usually.
Man, that's true. That's kind of a defining characteristic. The Doctor knows what the Doctor's about.
It's definitely what I can say about myself.
For sure.
You would never get the Doctor saying, I may not be the most qualified person in the room here, but I had a little idea.
Possibly, but they're lying.
Yeah.
The Doctor probably is the opposite of just saying, I know everything, and then maybe sometimes getting that wrong.
They definitely would play dumb, depending on the incarnation, but that's a different kettle of fish.
So this might be people's first introduction to you, because they may be just joining us for New Who and didn't listen to Classic Who. So tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I guess I'm your token boomer.
Fantastic.
I think we got a couple of those.
I know. And I almost don't qualify for that either, because born in 1964. So I'm right on the cusp of not being a boomer and being whatever came after boomers. But I am old enough that from about mid Patrick Troughton onwards, I was watching Classic Who in real time on Saturday night on BBC and kind of lived through that whole thing. John Pertwee was absolutely my doctor as a young child, and I was inconsolable when he was replaced, and I was never going to warm to Tom Baker, but I did after the Ark in Space. So you were talking on Rose about, you know, the big gap and then the new series coming along, and as one of the people who'd grown up with the original, I was looking at the new series with those old person's eyes. So I'll tell you a little bit about that and about how The Unquiet Dead was the story that won me over once we get into the story. But I guess also I've been around, I've done a bit of radio, I kind of do bits and pieces here and there. I work in IT to pay the bills, but I do radio for the fun. And you can catch me on an online station called 8radio.com every Wednesday evening and Saturday morning. Check it out, and you'll find me there and on there on demand as well. That's basically me.
Nice.
Awesome. We're so happy to have you.
Well, you know, it's really, really weird talking to you live because I have this really strange blink-like relationship with you whereby I say things to you on Twitter and then months later I'm traveling on a bus and I'm listening to the podcast. I'm usually commuting when I'm listening to you. And all of a sudden you're speaking to me and you're answering something that I said weeks earlier. And I just feel like I'm having this disjointed, timey-wimey conversation with you. So it's very odd to be talking to you now and you're actually answering back in real time.
I mean, we can wait if you want.
you can listen to this episode later.
Yeah.
Are we ready to dive into The Unquiet Dead?
Let's do it. Yep. This is where I think I'm going to admit that we were watching The Unquiet Dead. Joe is telling me that this was the episode that sold you on New Who. And then I had to admit, I couldn't remember this episode at all.
Honestly.
So it was almost a fresh viewing for me.
It almost was for me too, but I remembered more than you did.
The whole time we were watching it, I was like, I must have had it on in the background while like also doing homework. None of it rang any bells.
I will say, like, when we were watching through Doctor Who for the first time, and I also watched Torchwood, I got to Torchwood and I saw Gwen Cooper, and I was reading up on it. It's like, oh, she was already in Doctor Who. She was in this episode. And I was like, I don't remember her in that episode at all. So she must have had a very small role. She doesn't. She has a huge role in this episode.
Like, it shows that she's a good actress, that she is both herself, but she is also a very believably different character from the character in Torchwood. And you don't automatically think, oh, here's Torchwood girl.
I remember reading something about her casting for this too. Her worried that she wasn't going to get it because she came into the audition wearing a shirt that was the complete opposite of this character. I think it had like two naked women on the t-shirt kissing. And she was like, oh, I'm not going to get it. But she did get it. So she contains multitudes.
Well, perhaps she was playing to the show's key demographic there.
Everything we do is for the lesbians.
Oh, that's going to be the show title. So before we dive into the episode proper, we're doing things a little differently here in New Who. We're not going to go through the episode bit by bit. I'm just going to do a summary.
We don't have 10 episodes to go through.
That's true. So I'm just going to do a summary and then we'll talk about whatever we want to talk about. So the Doctor and Rose accidentally travel back in time to Cardiff, 1869. There they bump into Charles Dickens and a pair of funeral home workers, Mr. Sneed and Gwyneth.
Great name, Mr. Sneed.
It is. The latter have been having problems with their dead customers not staying that way. Turns out they are being reanimated by alien gas beings coming through a space-time rift. With the help of the psychic Gwyneth, the Doctor plans to give these beings, called the Gelf, a new home. But the Gelf abuse this offer for help and decide to take the Earth instead. With Rose and the Doctor trapped, it's up to Charles Dickens and Gwyneth to save the day with an explosion. And that's my summary.
That explosion looked a little expensive.
It was on screen for a little too long.
Because it was probably expensive.
Because when they come back to it and it's just the fire, it looks a little cheesy, a little dated. But just the second time they show it, it's just the fire.
I have to admit, I hadn't seen the episode since I watched it when it was first transmitted. And again, like you were saying on the Rose episode, my memory is of New Who being fantastically, amazingly modern and completely different to Classic Who. And then I went back and looked at it here and I kind of got that feeling of, wow, this looks old. We've got used to effects that are so magically different, I guess, over the last kind of 5 to 10 years.
I haven't been appreciating this feeling at all. Like the stuff that introduced me into the series looks old now, and I'm old now. It all feels quite bad.
You can tell it's like early 2000s, yeah. mid-2000s. That is like one thing that like struck me about this episode. There is huge chunks of this episode that have no music. And that was surprising to me, because I feel like a more modern Who kind of has music nonstop. And there's like a lot of scenes that I'm like, this has a interesting tone just because there's no music.
There's no music.
Specifically, I'm thinking of the scene where the dead woman goes to Charles Dickens. He's reading the Christmas Carol. She stands up and she's glowing and there's ghosts going everywhere and everybody's running around. And there's like no music scoring that. And I feel like there would be if it was made now.
I almost kind of wonder, because what's something that we talked about on Rose, or not Rose, The End of the World, how much money they spent on The End of the World. And how much money they didn't have to spend on everything else. And I almost wonder if that was just a budget issue of like, hey, you get 5 stingers, make them count. Like,
possible.
It's an interesting one with the incidental music. I don't know if you're familiar with Alfred Hitchcock's movie The Birds, which is a really scary old black and white Hitchcock movie. And if you've never seen it, do go and watch it.
Okay, give me an hour and a half.
Because it has no incidental music whatsoever at any point during the film. You don't notice that until someone points it out to you, but it makes it really, really scary because like someone is walking into an empty house and the birds, which surprise, surprise, are the villains, are perching on the roof. And you hear every little flutter and flap of their wings, but you hear nothing else. And it's so eerie. Strongly recommend you watch that if you haven't seen it before.
I haven't seen it. I've seen some Hitchcock, but not that one. I need to watch it.
That, you know, when you have just that weird cultural awareness of a thing,
yeah,
because it's been referenced so much, that's all I've got. And we should watch it.
Weirdly, like, I think I've seen 2 Hitchcocks and they're not the very popular ones.
Which 2?
The Trouble with Harry and the original Man Who Knew Too Much. Not the one that's more well known. He did 2 of them. I saw the original one, which I think has Peter Lorre in it.
Mm.
So that's it. I need to expand that. Like, he did Psycho, right?
He did, yeah.
And I haven't seen Psycho. What's wrong with me? I want to see that one that's like one long shot. What is that, Rope, I think? That's what I need to see.
There is definitely a point in this episode where it becomes eerie, the mm-hmm. lack of music. Almost because you're like, you've noticed the absence of it, and you're like, ah. There are also a couple of scenes I feel like the very first scene that introduces Dickens felt like it could have been straight out of Classic Who. Like, I could have watched, like, clips from the scene, and I don't, again, because I didn't remember it, don't know if I could tell you if I could have, like, placed it in time of which series it was a part of.
Because it's a much slower scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Maybe it would have fitted in well with a third Doctor, a Joe. Would have been quite a nice vibe with that.
This episode, I think, feels more Classic Who than the previous 2 episodes did.
Again, when I rewatched it, I had a good memory of the plot from when I originally saw it. But there were some things that I'd either forgotten or I hadn't noticed the first time round, which really impressed me the second time round. And one of those is towards the very beginning, when they've landed the TARDIS, but they haven't left yet. Rose is bubbling with excitement at the thought of being in a Christmas, which is dead and gone, and that, you know, it happened once and never again, and yet we're about to re-experience it. And they do this lovely shot where they open the TARDIS door and it's the snow, and the camera pans down at the snow, and it kind of stays there for a moment, and then she puts her foot in it, and you just know you're inside her head thinking, I'm about to make a footstep in the snow of 200 years ago or whatever.
That's something that I've noticed this watch around, is how infectious Rose's like sense of wonder is. So what would you say is, if that's something that you sort of didn't notice the first time around, what was the thing about this episode that sold you on this version of Doctor Who?
I can tell you exactly what it was, and it happened in that same scene as well. You know, I was wildly excited for Doctor Who coming back, and you know, I watched Rose, you know, I was quite happy with it, but still, I wasn't quite sure if it was my Doctor Who, because particularly in that scene where she was talking to Clive, and there's all these pictures of the Doctor, but it's only Christopher Eccleston, it kind of felt like the past was being a bit denied. And then you had The End of the World, which was great and very visually stunning, but suddenly, like, the Time Lords are all gone. And again, it was kind of a little bit like the carpet being pulled out from under my feet, and the old show that I knew was gone. But they're about to walk out of the TARDIS, and he says, oh, you know, you can't go out dressed like that. We've only seen the console room. And suddenly he's saying, go down the corridor, 5th door on the left, go down that corridor, past the bins, do this. And then I suddenly just thought, right in that instant, yes, that's my big TARDIS. that's my show. And it, that line made me feel the connection with Classic Who.
That's fantastic. I don't think I would have guessed that specific detail in a million years. So that's, I love that that's what it is.
Do you know what is brilliant about it? Is that it's not off-putting to the brand new viewers. Because to a brand new viewer, that's just quirky Doctor. But to a classic series viewer, yes, the TARDIS is still a giant place that you can get lost and get chased by some Tardens in.
Right. I didn't really think about it, but yeah, it is casual the way they drop it in, just how big the TARDIS is on the inside.
I can see why they didn't show more than just the Ninth Doctor in that first episode, because yeah, it's just starting back up and they don't want to confuse new people. But they did change that in the novelization. And I believe you said you had novelization thoughts in our Twitter conversation.
There's some great stuff in some of the novelizations. And I love it, like you were saying, when the novelization takes an episode of Who that you already love and adds in a little bit more depth. That's really, really good. There was a great novelization of The Rescue. You know, the two-part story where Vicky gets introduced.
And Barbara kills her dog.
That's right. That's right. And because it's only two parts, it would have been a very thin novelization, but it had to be the same standard size as all the other Target novelizations. And they got Ian Martyr, who played Harry Sullivan, to write that novelization. He created so much more stuff that was in the background and what was going through Ian's mind as he was inching along a ledge in a cave. And as we all know, in the first Doctor, you spend a very long amount of time on numerous occasions inching slowly along narrow ledges in caves. But there's a scene where the smell of the cave is so rotten that he can feel kind of the sick rising in his stomach and he's trying to avoid vomiting. That kind of thing, you know, it really added a lot of color to it, which was great. And there's a brilliant scene in the novelization of the Sea Devils. It's only about two sentences, but it brings the essential character of the Doctor and the Doctor's compassion really, really vividly to the fore. You remember in the Sea Devils, there was the old guy who was the governor of the prison, who had been hoodwinked by the Master. And, you know, the Master had essentially got him to, you know, give him the run of the prison. And he thought he was, you know, acting for Britain and acting against Britain's enemies. And he was really, really disappointed and let down when he discovered that the Master, you know, was bringing these Sea Devils in. And he picks up his gun as the Sea Devils invade the prison. But he's left the safety catch on and it won't fire and the Sea Devils kill him. Well, in the novelization, the Doctor comes into his office. He sees that he's been killed by a Sea Devil. He sees him there and he sees that the safety catch is still on the gun. And he just bends down and he flicks the safety catch off so that when other people discover the body, they won't think he was an incompetent fool who, you know, didn't even take the safety catch off his gun. It's just that little human, well, not human, but, you know, that compassionate touch that really adds something to the story and tells you who the Doctor is.
That's nice.
Jinx.
I can wax lyrical on the novelizations because back in my day, which is something us boomers say all the time, you know, there were no videos, there were no DVDs, there was no streaming. So the books, when they came out, they were my DVDs. And I had the woman who ran the local bookstore in South Dublin pestered to within an inch of her life. Because, again, no internet. You never knew what novelizations were coming out next.
Right.
And I'd be down, you know, is there any new Doctor Who books? Any new Doctor Who books? And eventually I found another bookshop and they had a trade magazine that was kind of like, you know, Irish Publishers Weekly or something. If you looked at that, that would show you the schedule of books that were going to be published over the next 3 months. And I go, oh my goodness, Image of the Fendel is coming out in 3 months' time. That's amazing.
And then you could stop harassing the bookstore owner.
Oh, I used to do this thing. Tony will like this. Because Tony likes when child fans do cute, stupid things. I so wanted my experience when I was reading the book to be the same experience that I had when I was watching it on TV. So when I got each novelization, I would either remember where the cliffhangers had been, or I would work out where the cliffhangers had been. I would work out how long the reprise was, you know, in the following episode. And I would put a big mark at the part where the following episode started from, and then a big mark at the point where the previous episode had ended. And when I was reading it, I would read through to the end of the episode, and then I would go back and start from the reprise, and then read. That is so stupid.
I'm crying. This is one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard.
I was a very passionate little Doctor Who fan.
That's truly amazing.
It just makes me think, the other day, so Joe will read to me a lot, like we'll read books together and he'll read. And the other day, I like caught him doing something that I didn't understand. Oh. Which is that...
That's just a guy thing, Tony.
he was counting pages. And I don't even... What were you doing? What do you do? Explain it?
When I get to the... This is like a weird OCD thing. Probably. When I get to the end of a page, I will like put my finger on the next page.
Yes.
And then I'll do that for every page I finish. I'll just keep moving my finger further through the book. And if I get to like any breaks, I'll move it forward just to sort of see how much of the chapter I have left. But I won't just flip to the end of the chapter. I'll just do this weird process. And then I'll go past it. And then I'll just, if I get to the end of the book, if like I get all the way to the end, I'll start moving my finger back through the pages until it meets back up to where I'm reading. It's very weird.
This whole time we'd been reading together, and this whole time Joe's doing this like very elaborate thing where he was counting pages and moving forward and moving backwards, and like it was all an involved part of the process of reading the book that was like integral to your experience of reading it, that I was like, hey, what's going on over there?
I can't explain it.
I don't know. It's just, I like it.
So, yeah, I cannot judge you for rereading the cliffhangers.
It makes, you know what? Your logic is perfect.
Yeah.
It cannot be challenged.
It's a child's logic. Yeah.
If you had access to it, would you have, like, listened to the Doctor Who theme before reading the book?
Okay. I used to play it in my mind at the end and then go back and play it into the... I was terrible. I was a completely obsessed little boy with Doctor Who.
I love it so much.
Fantastic. We should probably get back around to the Quiet Dead.
To this specific episode? Yeah,
I know. Sorry, I've hijacked the podcast.
Oh, no, that was a fantastic story.
Yeah, that was. It's very important that we got that in this episode.
Well, Doctor Who should be fun.
So, like, they still release novelizations every once in a while. Do you do the same thing? Well, they don't really have, I guess they don't have cliffhangers anymore, unless it's like a two-parter.
Yeah, not really. Yeah, there was a moment in this episode that we were like,
that would have been a cliffhanger. When Rose is being the zombies, let's say, are coming towards her, and then the Doctor comes in and saves her. That's 100% like a cliffhanger.
And resolve.
Yeah, in the old days, they would have stretched that out over 6 episodes. So.
Yes. Because part of me wonders if like this, because Mark Gatiss was like a huge fan of Doctor Who. I believe he'd written some things before this, like audio stuff. I just wonder if he had like a serial written out.
He had this sitting waiting to go.
Yeah. So I want to talk about, Charles Dickens. What did we think of Charles Dickens? First off, I want to say right off the bat, he has played Charles Dickens many times before. I think he even did like stage shows of Charles Dickens and was a little hesitant to do this until he read the script and he's like, oh, this guy knows a lot about Charles Dickens.
They get the character.
Yeah, they got him. So,
well, you know, I'd read some of Dickens' work, but I knew very little about the man. And it seemed to me to be a believable what Charles Dickens might have been like. So, but I'm no expert.
Me either. But he seems nice.
I was going to say, yeah, I've got nothing insightful down here. I don't know much about Dickens and what he was like. I do like the idea. This is one of the things that I have always really liked about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. First of all, I love the like spiritualism that is in this era, but I like the idea of somebody who's very famous for, you know, writing ghosts and that kind of stuff, also being a kind of a famous skeptic, which is the opposite of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, I should specify.
who wrote a very logical character, but believed any bullshit that was put in front of him.
Absolutely. Anyone would tell him, and I love that about him.
My favorite thing is, like, he just, like, was convinced Harry Houdini was magic, and Harry Houdini was like, I'm not magic.
There's no such thing. Please listen to me. He's like, it's fine that you won't. That you won't tell me about your magic powers. I'm not upset about it.
What I did like, and is very true to form, certainly with modern celebrities, is the way he was like, get out of my carriage, get out of my carriage. Oh, you're praising my work. Yeah, you can stay.
Apparently also in that, the doctor is talking about, was it Martin Chuzzlewit? And he's like, but what was with all that American stuff? That was, it felt like padding. And apparently it was. I can't remember. I was reading this on Wikipedia. But he had to write extra for, like, the way it was being published or whatever. So he did kind of make filler to pad it out and didn't like it. So that's kind of a deep cut.
Nice.
It's a Charles Dickens deep cut. It's so stupid, but I really like the Shakespeare joke. Instead of saying, what the Dickens, he says, what the Shakespeare. And that's... That's such a stupidly good joke.
There were a couple of times, again, someone who, as we were sitting down to watch this episode, going, I don't remember this at all. I don't know how good it could be if I don't remember it. There were a couple of times where I was like, ooh, that's good dialogue. The first time where, you know, the unquiet dead, where the dead woman sits up and the caretaker's just like, oh no. Like, underplayed, like, not this again. There were just a couple of moments of dialogue that I was like, okay, this episode's really funny.
I also thought it was hilarious the way, you know, every time one of these dead people would come back to life, Gwen would round on Mr. Sneed and go, that's terrible. Why are you doing this? And he's like, it's not my fault.
I like the idea that there are these two people who are like, I don't know why they're hiding it. I mean, I guess I do. Like, I understand that, like, people would assume that it was them and that they were evil Satan-worshipping bad guys. But it's also just very funny watching people react to a thing that's happening around them that does not involve them. Of, like, they're trying to hide it, and it's like, but they don't know what it is they're trying to hide.
We're just as clueless as anyone.
It's interesting, too, that once you go into Sneed's house, once he's kidnapped Rose, you never really see Cardiff again, apart from in the very final scenes. Although it starts off with this, you know, Cardiff at Christmas, it's really an inside the house story.
Also, a lot of this show is filmed in Cardiff, except for this episode, because there wasn't enough, like, older architecture, so they had to film it somewhere else. I think there's only like one shot, maybe two, that are they actually filmed in Cardiff. And I think that's very funny.
That's another line of dialogue that I liked, which was they're trying to find the weakest part of the rift where the most ghost sightings are. And he's like, ah, yeah, that'd be the morgue. And Rose is like, yeah, I don't suppose you were going to say gazebo. it's in the garden.
Somewhere pleasant, not scary at all. The rift, that sticks around and that becomes part of Torchwood, correct?
That's right. And reappears in future episodes of this series as well.
And that's interesting considering this episode has
Gwen in it.
Has Gwen. And she's playing a character named Gwyneth.
I mean, they are related.
Yeah. Eventually, it is revealed. I don't think that was the original intent, but...
No.
So what do we think of her performance as the psychic Gwyneth?
I think she's fantastic.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. You don't really like Gwen Cooper.
I don't. Yeah, that's one of my spicy Torchwood takes, and I'm sorry about it.
She's really rude to her husband. I'm just saying. But she's really good. She sells it. I really enjoy the scene she has with Rose, where she slowly starts revealing that she's psychic and then just goes all the way in on it.
That little monologue is a great performance of her, you know, being psychic and seeing Rose's world, seeing the future through that. That's a good scene.
And also the religion is coming out again. You know, all these women and they're half naked.
That's something that Tony pointed out at the beginning of the episode when the doctor's like, oh, you can't go out dressed like that. You'll, you know, scare everyone half to death or whatever. And like, then she puts on an outfit that honestly shows more skin.
I mean, granted, it's, I think the big thing is that she's wearing like pants, but still, yes, watching that scene, I was like, she did not have cleavage before and she has it now. That's better though. And I do like that the doctor changed his jumper.
That's it.
Even Leela had to cover up in the talons of Wang Chiang. So
yeah, I love that the fact that the doctor doesn't change at all. He thinks he did, but
I won't lie. I love a good companion wardrobe change.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fun. I like the idea of the wardrobe in the TARDIS and that there's just all these great big costumes and dressing up for the time period seems super fun.
Is that what you'd do if you were a companion?
Oh yeah.
You know what? You could just dress up like the other doctors. Because he apparently keeps all that clothes.
Yeah, they're all still around for sure.
Isn't there like even a bit where Romana 2 puts on the, like a version of the doctor's outfit? Like in, I think, in her first episode?
Destiny of the Daleks, yeah. That's right.
Now I'm just thinking about how every Romana outfit is A+ top tier.
1 and 2.
Yeah, she knew how to dress.
Oh, she was the epitome of style. Like she really was. And she was a childhood crush of mine as well.
Which one? 1 or 2?
2. Definitely 2. Something happens here for the first time in the new series. I liked it. And it's also something that happens a lot more as we go through. And that is the Doctor thinking he's right and solving things only to find he's actually made the situation far, far worse.
So much worse.
And put everybody into unspeakable danger. Yeah, let them in, let them in, let them in. Oh.
Are you talking about the fact that he's like, these people are probably good and then they're not?
I do like the conversation around the morality of like letting them borrow bodies. Because I think that establishes something really early on, which is that like...
The doctor's going to give people a chance.
The doctor's going to give people a chance, but also like his morality is alien. And like, if you think about it from like a purely logical standpoint, it's like, yeah, I've got a donor card. Like, I'm not going to be using my body when I'm done with it. Yeah. But like Rose is having like a very human emotional reaction of like, but that's disrespectful.
Right.
It's an interesting conflict to have between those two characters. And it's interesting to set the doctor like opposed to this very sort of human emotional morality response.
I'd give up my...
And it's also interesting to have him be wrong, but...
Yeah. I'd give up my body for an alien if they needed it.
If I wasn't
Not
using
if they're
it.
Going to like, you know, kill a bunch of people. But if, you know, they're a nice alien. Sure.
If you're a non-murdering alien, you can have my body when I die. Put that in writing.
But the doctor, as usual, makes a snap judgment. Like, he doesn't stop and think and go back and forward on the morality. He just goes, no, using the bodies is great.
Right.
He does, I think he does ultimately leave that decision up. Well, he doesn't leave it up to...
Well, he leaves it up to Gwyneth because she agrees with him.
Yes,
not
that's
because
true.
He's leaving it up to her. Because he definitely sees himself as the end-all, be-all arbiter in this situation of, like, I said, it's fine, so it's fine.
I'm thinking through the moral ramifications of everything now.
Are you?
This is a complex episode. but yeah, they ultimately turn out to be bad, and they get exploded. And
I do love that the solution, too, is just blow it up. And you know who's absolutely devastated that he wasn't there for that?
Who?
The Brigadier.
Yeah.
Brigadier's like, I cannot believe the one time where the solution was just blow up the aliens and I wasn't there. Someone's got to write a story of the Brigadier hearing the story of the Unquiet Dead and being like, God damn it. That could have been me.
But it's interesting as well. Now, apologies, Tony. Joe is going to really appreciate this rather juvenile segment. You won't.
Oh, no.
There's an interesting contrast between the aliens in this episode and in the next episode. The aliens in this episode, if there is something that has gas in it, they can't go past it because they get sucked in, so they can't pass gas. Whereas in the next episode...
That's all they do.
I had the terrible realization yesterday that that's a two-parter.
There's some good things in it.
Literally all you know what? It's probably good that we're rewatching it, because then I will see the good things that are in it that I've forgotten, because right now all I remember is farting aliens. That's it. And like when we got to it, I was like, oh no.
So this episode sold you on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
When I watched it originally, I still wasn't sold quite yet. And the next one definitely didn't do it either.
No. If I had to get rid of one story from, you know, that season one of New Who, it would be the next story.
Oh, I'm not looking forward to it for
What's
real.
Bad is like the follow up to it is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I think it's called Boomtown.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That one's pretty good. But you gotta have your farts before you can have your desserts. I don't know.
Let me say. Yeah. Let me guess. The episode that sold you on this show. Oh, the two parter with Jack.
Yes, it's
the empty child,
the doctor
dances. Yeah. Okay, that would have been my guess. How far into the season is that? How far away are we from that? Is that near the end? Long it took?
Honestly, don't remember the order of these episodes. I don't think it's that far off, because it's not that long of a season.
Do you know what's wild is I couldn't tell you, I couldn't give you like an episode, although it probably was The Empty Child. The Empty Child, I think, is like just so solid that you're like, oh, that is what this show is. It's like such a good example of the heart of the show.
Yeah. And the fact that everybody lives is brilliant.
Yeah.
Ugh, and like you feel warm after watching it.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like RTD kind of writes things just like, things happen. Things are happening. And that's fine. But like The Empty Child, The Doctor Dances is like the first episode where everything clicks. Things are set up and then paid off. And
it's very heavy on the structure compared to RTD for
sure. We've got 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes.
Oh, okay. You know what? There. Looking at it now and looking at an episode list, Dalek.
Dalek is good.
Yeah.
But it's still not the one that sold me.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. Empty Child, I understand Empty Child as a thing that sells you on the show.
But we're talking about The Unquiet
Death. My bad.
Gaddis's masterpiece. Because, yeah, that is a thing. I do like this episode, even though Gaddis generally isn't my favorite writer. I never think he's, like, terrible, except for one episode that I think is really bad.
Which one?
The Eye Boogers.
Oh, Sleep? Is that what it's
Sleep
called?
No More.
Sleep No More.
I'm not a big fan of that one. But I think most of his episodes are just like, oh, that was fun. But they're generally not that. They don't stick with me. I mean, this one didn't stick with me.
Yeah.
But I do like it. I think it's really good. It is better the second time going through it. I was like, oh, there's a lot of good stuff here. And I wonder if part of that is because it does feel more classic.
I've got
like more of a taste for that. So I can digest it easier.
I wonder if because Gaddis is such a fan that like watching it with the context of the entire show, and it's interesting that like you say that this is the one that stuck out to you as a classic Who fan, and like watching it this go around, it's like, yeah, it feels more meaty than it did the first time. And I wonder if that's just because it's so written from the perspective of somebody who like, is a fan of the show. I mean, and even like, especially with Rose, and you talk about the decision to like have it just be 9, like it's very clear that decisions are being made there so that it's a blank slate for new people.
Which is great, and this is a very standalone episode. You can watch this without having, you know, to have seen certain other episodes, and you don't need a degree in Doctor Who to understand all the references in it, because it has become very, you know, heavy on its own kind of history in recent years.
There are a couple of things that are set up in this episode, though.
We get our second Bad Wolf?
Which is Gwyneth. When she's reading Rose's mind, she says the big bad wolf. And then we also, in that very same scene, she talks about how her parents passed away. And then Gwyneth says, I'm sorry about your dad, too.
Mm.
Without Rose having said anything, I feel like that's kind of setting up Father's Day.
Yeah.
So she's like, it's been on your mind a lot lately. Because she just discovered she has access to a time machine. And maybe she can go fix that, and there won't be any giant wasp problems, I'm sure.
I'm sure that'll be fine.
I do want to say, I think the Gelf special effect is really cool.
Well, you know what I particularly like too?
What's that?
Their voice.
Yeah, because like it's they're talking, but also Gwyneth is talking at the same time.
Is that a child?
It sounds like a child. Apparently, that was a little more difficult than they were expecting. The lip sync part.
Oh, really?
Because they were just going to do it completely CG. And then it was like, the bodies are CG, but the faces are like filmed with like some sort of effect so that they could just use the lighting from that and just use that so that they just had the actor speak and they filmed it with like weird lights and then put that over the CG thing.
Wow.
And also I think it was a last minute idea to have it go from blue to red when they turn evil.
I thought they were interesting because they were so plaintive in the beginning and then all of a sudden so evil. And it's reminded me a bit of the Axons as well. You know, we come in peace, we'll do nice things for you. Oh, by the way.
Though if you're paying close enough attention, they definitely kill someone in the teaser at the beginning.
True.
They grab that guy and break his neck right at the beginning. If you're paying attention, you can foresee that twist, which is good. Sometimes you can't foresee the twist and the twist happens and you're like, well, that came out of nowhere.
That wasn't earned at all.
Nothing bothers me more than a completely unearned twist. But that's an earned twist.
Nothing bothers me more than a completely unearned twist.
I'm looking at you, Frozen.
Should we do a break and then do final thoughts?
Sounds good to me. Then we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts. We've decided we're going to do final thoughts.
we got to get some more structure to this thing. There's less stuff to talk about because there's less content to discuss. Anyway,
yeah,
this is a conversation for later.
This is too meta.
My bad.
I definitely appreciate final thoughts. Do you know what is missing from the new Who episodes? You should still be giving your alternative episode titles.
Alternative episode titles?
Yeah, because that was a real highlight on the Classic Who podcast.
Yeah, I know. I was so bummed when I was like, there's not individual episodes.
You can still do it.
I could still do it. I was also thinking when we do multi-parts, I'll just do like the serial title for like when we do two-parters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to do one for Rose, The End of the World, and The Unquiet Dead. Well, the Unquiet Dead one is easy because I keep messing it up, so it's the Quiet Undead.
Yeah.
Joe couldn't find...
with the gas aliens, but not that one.
Joe couldn't find the title card that he created for it because that's how he had saved it.
Yeah, I'd saved it as Quiet Undead. I'll have to get back to you. Let's take a break.
Yeah, we'll give me some time to work.
I'll figure it out when one of you are doing your final thoughts. So we're going to take a break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
It was the year of fire.
The year of destruction.
The year we took back what was ours.
It was the year of rebirth.
The year of great sadness.
The year of pain. And the year of joy.
It was a new age.
It was the end of history.
It was the year everything changed.
The year is 2261.
The place, Babylon 5. The podcast is the Epsilon 3.
Right here on the ESO Network.
And we're back!
Welcome back.
Tony, if we're bringing this back, this means you're going to bring your bit back.
Go ahead, ask me.
Hey, Tony, do you know what time it is?
I do, yes.
What time is it?
It is 4:50 p.m. for us.
Yeah, it's, was it 9:50 for you?
That's a good question. It is 9:50 for me.
So you can't do your bit. This man needs to get to bed. He's a boomer.
I might just say I'm not a bad boomer. I'm open-minded, progressive. You know, I'm good guy, not terrible old guy.
It's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
This episode took away any unease I had about the new series. We had had our current day Earth one, we'd had our future one, and now we had our past one, and it felt like we had the full set, and I felt that we were really back at home in Doctor Who, as I knew it. New and different and changing, as it should always be, but a continuation of the original story, and not a slate wiped clean. I really enjoyed that feeling of being at home with Doctor Who again. And as a story, I think it's great. It stands on its own two feet. You know, you don't need any other story to support it. And it's got that great kind of claustrophobia. Again, a little bit of Cardiff, but then once you get inside that house, those walls are closing in on you, which is really good as it develops. And the wonder of Rose, the excitement bubbling up in her as, you know, she's thinking about setting foot in the past and reliving things that no one has ever been able to relive.
I feel like I've talked about this a lot, of like wonder being kind of like a core concept in Doctor Who. And I feel like nothing makes me feel more justified in that than the way Rose is written in season one, of just like, yeah, me and RTD, we get it. like that is the magic of the TARDIS and getting to see the universe. It's fear and wonder, the thing that pushes you forward and the thing that holds you back and say, wait a minute, maybe that brand new thing that's exciting might also kill you. Just look out for that. That's all I'm saying. And I love those two things as core concepts in Doctor Who. That's just the way that Rose is written, to be the wonder of the show, of being there to be excited and to have that, you know, feeling of giddiness of seeing something new. Sorry, this is funny because I'm talking, but I can also see how hard Joe is thinking, trying to come up with a
Oh, I've
titles.
Already got him.
You've already got him?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's just your face?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, it's always like this.
Now I forgot what I was saying.
So this is an episode.
This is an episode.
Which it is.
That I think my opinion has really improved on a second viewing. I think if you had asked me like before watching again, I'd be like, yeah, it was fine, I think. I don't think I was at all like entirely impressed with it the first time. I don't think I hated it. I think it was just like, I watched that. It was fine. I do think there's something about having the context of, oh, this is a historical, right? Mm-hmm. Like watching this in the context of Doctor Who as a whole thing with this great big canon, and like understanding the kind of episode that this is sort of really being written after makes it a much more enjoyable experience, I guess. And it's funnier than I remember.
Yeah, I think this episode does two things at once that needs to happen for New Who, because we're introduced to the character, we're introduced to the companion in the first episode, and we're introduced to sort of monsters. Then the second episode, we are introduced to the future. The two things this episode does is, first off, we're introduced to the past. It's our first historical. That's important that we do that. It's also kind of our first standard Doctor Who episode, because I feel like the first two are doing...
One's a pilot,
and the other one's kind of weirder. And this is the one that I feel like is like... I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's kind of like a template for like, this is how your typical Doctor Who episode goes.
Yeah, I think because Rose is a pilot, and then the end of the world is...
We're showing off.
please look at all of our special effects and costumes and how much money we're spending. And you're right. This is kind of the first, like, and now an episode of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, in a way, the first two were doing the heavy lifting of setting it up. This is where you kind of sit back and relax.
Yes. It's really good. Charles Dickens is really great, I think. And Gwyneth is really great. Again, I think watching it again with both the context of having watched Classic Who, as well as just all of Who, really. Because the first time I watched it, I was brand new. And this time I have like more, I'm on sturdier ground. I know what I'm getting from Doctor Who, so I can appreciate more of what's happening. Whereas the first time I'm like very cautious.
I do think when you're watching a new show, there's like a certain level of trust that has to be earned, and where you're like, okay, I don't know about this. And now that you like have that level of trust, it's a lot easier to see some of the stuff that you like maybe scanned over before.
Yeah, like I've never disliked this episode, but it was an episode that I wasn't as familiar with. Because again, I think it is sort of like, here is a template for what Doctor Who's going to be like. Just on a typical episode is like this, and not like the crazy things we had to do in the first two episodes. But yeah, I really enjoyed it this go around. And now do you want to know my titles for Rose and the End of the World?
Yes, please.
Rose is an earthly teen.
God, referring to her as a teen, which is not untrue, really brings home some uncomfortable truths.
I was contemplating between an earthly teen or an earthly turn, but because there's the whole turn of the earth thing. And the title for The End of the World is, the alternate title is Thin Skin.
I've come up with an alternate title for The End of the World as well. There's a word which is in common use now, which wasn't in common use back then. And I've done a word play on it to describe Cassandra, the thin-fluencer.
And a full body visceral reaction to that, and it was bad.
Right. I'm on the right track, so.
Absolutely no, thank you.
All right. So before we go, is there anything that you would like to plug?
Actually, this week is a special week for me because the show that I do on 8 Radio has been running since 2014. And this week is episode number 500.
Ooh, wow. Congrats.
Kind of a bit of a milestone. I'm enjoying that. And I am thinking up some ideas that I'm going to be pitching to the two of you in the near future. So watch this space.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay.
Also, you should plug your book.
Yeah, it's called Shipwrecked, Life on the Waves with Radio Caroline. It's pretty much out of print now, but if you follow me on Twitter, at Steve Conway, I still have copies if you really, really want to force yourself to read it. It's a tale of what life was like on the last pirate radio ship in Europe.
There's some pretty wild stuff in there.
Please go to mintypineapple.com/store. I've got a couple of books and I've got a handful of comics that you can purchase, and they're all good. Well, some of the older stuff maybe is a little wobbly, but for the most part, they're good. Buy them. Thank you.
Buy them. Thank you.
I got The Princess and the Pterodactyls and Road Trippy. Those are the books. Got Ghost Town, which is a Western horror comic. Tugboats Are Cool, which is one of my favorites just because it's so ridiculous. Time, which is a weird comedy, sci-fi thought experiment in the style of Saturday Morning Breakfast cereal comics. And I got a bunch of stuff, so just go look at that. Oh, A Good Cat. So yeah, mintypineapple.com/store. And if you liked this episode of the podcast, check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, and more at Linktree/Watchathon. And I also want to give a special shout out to Vince and EL for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vince.
Check out more of their music at VinceandEL.bandcamp.com. Speaking of Vince, tune in next time when we talk about Aliens of London and World War III with Vincent EL.
Oh boy.
Yeah. We're going to have a real gas of a time.
Ugh, I'm already so regretting all my life choices.
But until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Goodbye, and thanks for having me.
There's a wardrobe through there. First left, second right, third on the left, go straight ahead, under the stairs, past the bins, fifth door on your left. Hurry up.
What Shakespeare is going on?
No chance you're going to say gazebo, is there?
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.